This week on the Media Corps Minute podcast, I sit down with Jake Kirsch, the senior director and partner at ETS Performance. Guys, you guys are in for a treat this week. This was a blast. I had a ton of fun talking with Jake. We learn about his story, how ETS has progressed and kind of scaled over the years and where it's going, but also what it's like to grind and work hard and have that inner dog in you. But then also what it's like to be selfish and how that can actually be beneficial. So that's a good point at the very end. Stay tuned to the very end to hear about that one. But this is going to be a fun one. Enjoy. Jake, how are we doing, man?
Never better, man.
Never better.
Happy to be here.
I love it. I love it. Dude, I was, I think ever since we first met and I sat down with you at the ETS office here in Rochester and we're sitting down, I'm like, I got to get this guy on the pod. I'm like, he's got good energy. He's got good business sense. Fun dude. So I'm excited to have you on today.
Hey, I'm excited too, man.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Because you've never been to our office either, right?
Only to pick up the sweatshirt I won.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I totally forgot about that.
I don't think I've ever won a giveaway before. And like when it comes to clothes, like that'd be better than like a lotto ticket or something like free Traeger. It's like, hey, you give me a free sweatshirt, we're good.
Yep. And we're coming into fall season, so hopefully we'll put it to good use.
Already have.
I love that. Does it fit well?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
New era.
That's cool. Well, sick, dude. I'm pumped to have you on. I'm excited to kind of get into your journey, business stuff that you've kind of picked up and learned along the way. But before we get into that, I want you to just kind of intro what ETS is. Just at a high level, just so people know.
Yeah. Well, ETS stands for Engelbert Training Systems. Ryan Engelbert, our founder, he founded it in 2010, and that was based out of the metro area up in Woodbury, Minnesota. And, okay. From 2010 to 2016, we didn't have more than just our number one location. And then when I came aboard in 2016 in Lakeville, we've had some pretty significant growth. But we are essentially a private sector sports performance training facility. And so We emphasize youth performance training with athletes ages 8 all the way to professional level, primarily 8 to 18 in college. And we give them individual strength and speed training. And all of our kids that come train with us, like they're doing exactly what they need given the context of if they're in season, if they're out of season, if they're hurt, if they're healthy, if they're a novice to training, if they're super high level. Like we work with anybody. And so but it's all in the youth sector. We don't do adults. We don't do, I guess, sports-specific training, if you would consider it. Like, we're not working on your jump shot. Mm-hmm. Again, we're trying to get you more physically prepared to go dominate your sport.
Yep. I like that. Yeah. So everyone's getting, like, personalized plan for them kind of thing.
Yeah, so nobody joins ETS, like, on a membership link on the website. Like, we don't sell the memberships online and just hope people click and add it to the cart and here they go. It's everyone comes in for an athlete evaluation first. And so that's our opportunity not to just, again, show the kids the place, but we get them in the facility. We take them through our dynamic movement prep. We go through our sprint progression. We do some relative strength and speed tests and basically get a feel for who is this athlete? Like, are they brand new? Do they know how to do a lunge without falling over? Or are they committed to go play D1 to the Gophers and they need to, again, optimize a few things to go dial in before they step foot on campus? And throughout that eval process, we obviously want to get to know the kid and see what motivates them and what their goals are and sit down with the family and get on the same page as them. And ideally, after that chat is done, we get them into the training facility and they're with us for as long as, again, we can have them. So
people can be with you for years as they're progressing their careers and, you know, stuff through high school and college and stuff.
That's probably the coolest part about what we do is we've been open technically since 2019.
Yeah.
And we have our very first athlete we ever signed up. She'll be graduating this year. And her and her three siblings have trained with us ever since.
That's
sick. And so we don't want to see a kid for 8 weeks, 12 weeks, a summer, like, we know that they should be training year round and there's, I mean, proven benefit to doing that. But it's the whole family aspect. Why we call it the ETS fam is like, once they step foot in our facility, I never want them to leave because their experience just gets better and better. Their connections with myself and the coaches just get deeper. And, We really embody that family feel. So yeah, we have kids that are on day one today, this morning, and we have kids that are on year five. So
It seems like you guys have a super strong like culture too, you know, even like throughout different age groups. I mean, it's just like every time I look, you know, on social media, different stuff like that, it just seems like there's that kind of like, you know, the ETS family, like that plays out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, culture's everything. Like it starts from, again, not only just the coaches, right? Like in our ability to motivate an athlete, whether it's someone that comes in, like I said, they're brand new to a facility and they've never lifted a weight before. It's like, we want to give them the best experience so that this is something that even if they're never going to play a varsity sport or see or go to the Olympics or do anything that, again, high level, it's like this is something that's going to improve not only character but lifestyles too. And so fitness is for everybody, health and wellness, whatever you want to consider it. But yeah, the culture bit is like I want the kids that step foot in our facility not just to know that they're going to get the best training possible, but they're going to be around people that they view as mentors, as friends, as some father figures, some big brother, little sister, whatever it might be. We want to embody that so then we can, again, connect on a deeper level so they get more than just training out of it.
With I feel like sports, I don't know if it's just Rochester, but it feels very competitive. And I feel like sometimes like the parents are more in it than the kids. Do you ever see that? It's like dad's stoked and it's just like, all right, Johnny's going because we need him to be this, you know?
Yep. Unfortunately, there are the helicopter parents. We don't run into it as much as you would think.
Okay.
Which is great because ultimately we try and take the parents out of the equation.
Right. Like right after it's like, all right, you're done.
Yeah. We have a sign on the door. It's athletes only. And we have parents all the time that ask like, well, can I go back there and watch, or can I go sit in on the eval while he's going through his assessment? Uh-huh. And it's like, no, this is the athlete's time, because whether they know it or not, it's like they might not think it as a parent when they're going through their training, but there's that level of anxiety. It's like, okay, dad's watching me, mom's watching me. It's like, I want to strip that. Kids aren't allowed to have their phones in the gym. They don't listen to their own music on their AirPods, like, because communication is huge and they get enough screen time throughout the day. It's
plenty.
I want to eliminate the distractions, have them understand, like, okay, we're here to get to work. We're going to have a heck of a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. We're going to work extremely hard and make a lot of progress. And yeah.
Dang. Yeah. That's sick. All right. So let's reverse it now a bit here. You know, young Jake, where'd you grow up, man?
Yeah, so I was born in Mankato.
Okay.
We moved here when I was 8, so I think that was right at 2001. So it was second grade. So I'm from Rochester. But as I grew up, I mean, I always loved sports. Like, we talk about it all the time. Like, these kids have screens in their face all day. But all I needed was a ball and some space. And, like, I'd throw it up, catch it for half hour, like, and just play, right? And so when I went to school, I went to John Marshall, and so I was a two-sport athlete. I realized that the third sport of basketball probably should end in middle school because not the tallest guy, but anyways, I played football and I played baseball. After the fact, realized I probably should have done track instead of baseball, but played football. I was a three-year starting quarterback for the football team. I was, at the time, one of two two-year captains that have been selected for the football team. And growing up, I mean, in Rochester, like, I take a ton of pride in being from here because at the time, like, John Marshall had amazing tradition in football of winning and success. And as I grew up and all the seniors left and we only had two that played my sophomore year, we got smoked every game. But through that, we had a very successful senior year. We had a lot of guys that had to grow up really, really quick. And throughout that time, I graduated, obviously, high school and had to make a calculated decision to not pursue any of the Division III or Division II schools that I had talked to throughout high school to go play for them. And I went to RCTC. And with that,
why was that, though?
And so it's funny because when I say it's a calculated decision, it was, for me, it was an opportunity to save some money, like go get my generals done. I realize it's pretty consistent everywhere, but to play football there, I had known of like the Isaac Frichtes who had left and transferred out to go play for the U of M, the Reese Lloyds who did the same thing. And for me, it was an opportunity where I'm like, well, I can go play some football for a team that dominates and again, earn my way to hopefully go take a next step elsewhere. And when I was there, it was It was not glorious. Like, if you've seen Last Chance U on Netflix, I watched that and I can think of like every main character in that show. Like, I can think of three or four people that I was the exact same type of person on that mm-hmm. team. And so after my freshman year, it was, I had, again, found success. We implemented a formation that was based around me called the Wild Kirsch. So I was a Wildcat quarterback. I was a slot receiver. I was a running back, special teams, you name it. Like, coach pointed, I'm like, all right, I'm there. And so after that, I was fortunate to get some interest after freshman year, but I knew sophomore year I was going to be coming back for a second year. And
yeah.
We had a coaching change, and it was for the better. The team was probably the tightest-knit team I think I've ever really been on. But obviously in a junior college setting, it's tough, and mm-hmm. people go there because that's the last place that they could go. People go there because they are in trouble with the law. Mm-hmm. People go there because they don't have the grades to go anywhere else. And so I was definitely an outlier in that sense, but I was fortunate to have received a walk-on spot for the U of M. My sophomore year, they had caught, I guess, received some of my film, and yeah. sophomore year had another great year, and I got a call. I was actually on vacation with my now wife's family in Puerto Rico, and I was at the pool, and I got a Facebook message from a recruiter at the U. He's like, you ready to be a Gopher? Can you make it here by fall camp? I was like, let's go.
That's sick.
And so from there, went to University of Minnesota. I was a running back, so soon realized that they weren't looking for a 5'10 and a half quarterback.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
I mean, there's a lot we can probably get into with my time at the U, but I went there. Ultimately played the least amount of football, got the least amount of playing time I ever had, but I learned so much more about myself, and ultimately that's helped a ton of where I am today, and I don't regret it for a second. Yeah.
So football was the main sport kind of throughout, you know. You just didn't want to get into any other ones other than, I mean, that and baseball right away?
Yeah, I mean, I played soccer. That's probably the only thing I ever quit in my life when I was in first grade. And so I played everything, just wanted to be active. But
you gotta try it.
100%.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when I was playing football, it was a thing that I just clicked with, like I found the most success with. And through that, too, like the football culture of lifting weights and all that stuff, I was very fortunate. When I was an eighth grader, after school, I'd take the bus over to JM, and some of the seniors that were on the football team, or the juniors and seniors, they kind of took me under their wing and like, hey, you can lift a little bit of weight. You're kind of strong. Uh-huh. And we'd be back there, and it was kind of cool because those were like my big brothers. Like, they were 17, 18 years old. I was 14 maybe. And
I mean, at that age, you're stoked.
100%.
You know, when the older kids, I think you're cool. Like,
yeah.
And you're pumped about that.
Yeah, big ego boost. But, and so that's ultimately what got me into training, too, is like everyone's saying you need to get bigger, faster, stronger. And I was always just that guy who was in the gym. And ultimately, football led me to the path I'm in now just because it was one of those things that I was always in the weight room, found success. I realized I'm realizing now in my year 30 of being alive that I'm kind of a control freak in the sense of like, I always knew I hate flying because I can't fly the plane, and Lord knows if we're going on a trip, I'm going to be the one driving. But the cool thing about sport and training is like, you're in control of your own destiny. It's like, no one can deter me from going to work hard and find progress in a weight room, because I know that it's on me to go work hard, put in the effort, the time, be consistent. And that's all stuff that, again, I still preach to this day because I lived it, and now I get to see it play out with all the kids that we train.
Yeah. That's why I liked track, because I didn't have to rely on anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
I could just go.
Knowing all the benefits of track and sprinting and all that stuff from a training perspective, like, I played baseball because I played it forever. Mm-hmm. And we had a very, very good team in my high school. And I played basically every game, but I was definitely a football player playing baseball. Uh-huh. And they didn't let us do both track and baseball because it's like, no, you got practice.
Right.
Well, which one can I go to? But I should have done sprints. I should have done the 100, maybe done some jumps. But
would have helped that football career a little bit more.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. What could have been.
I like it.
Yeah.
No, it's fun. Growing up in high school, I don't think there was an adult that I didn't meet that asked me, like, so you play football? Mm-hmm. You know, just being a big dude. Yeah. And I played up until ninth grade and I stopped.
Sure.
Because grew up in Wabasha and we just weren't good at football. Mm-hmm. It wasn't fun. And I would play both sides all the time. And it was just like, Nope. And it got it got bad enough, you know, 11th, 12th grade, where it's like you got team showing up, you got the superintendent coming out to your house saying, hey, like, you know, let's play this year.
Yep.
Because they just need it, you know, they need the help. But it's 100%. Like we were just so bad that it didn't make it fun, you know.
Yeah.
At that time too, like I didn't care. I was just lifting and, you know, doing track was my main one then. But
did you throw?
Yep.
Both shot and discus?
Yep. So I enjoyed that a ton. I did that all 4 years of high school, and I was disappointed because I didn't have a coach.
Nope.
So, again, Wabasha, limited coaches. Everyone else kind of had, you know, help doing things. And then throwing was kind of like, you know, the redheaded stepchild of the track team that just didn't get any attention. Really, because no one knew how to teach
it. No one knew how to coach it, yeah, for sure.
Well, it's like, oh, we don't know what we're doing. So it was kind of interesting. We kind of just, like, teach ourselves with, like, you know, someone watching.
Yep.
They tried, but once I kind of got, I think, you know, even closer to the senior year, it was me kind of leading a lot of the things, just because I was just the best one on the team at that point.
Yep.
But it was fun. I just excelled in it. I don't know. I was excited. I loved lifting. I loved throwing heavy things far. Oh. And but I missed state by one spot. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, well, you know, that sucked because I really wanted to go
for sure.
You know, further and do it in college. And I could have, but. Yeah, it was just fun. Yeah. But, you know, the football, I think there's a little bit of, like, regret and, like, going, oh, I could have probably done pretty well.
Done some damage.
On the line.
What would you have been? Would you prefer to be interior D-line, D-end, offense? What would have been?
In high school, I was less aggressive than I am now.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. So I liked the offensive side of just protecting.
Yeah.
All I got to do is not let anybody pass me. And, like, I was really good at that. So I played right tackle.
Let's go.
I was big, but I was quick. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'd run a 14-second 100, you know, as a 300-something-pound dude. You know, I was like, but he could move. And then after that, then he was down for the count for a long time. And that was it. But so, I mean, it was fun, and I don't know. But everyone kept getting injured,
mm-hmm.
You know, especially on the line. It was like, yep, knee injury. Everyone's on crutches.
Nope.
I'll just keep lifting. So.
The worst part about team sport is there is a 100% chance of injury. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when and how bad.
Yep. But I want to kind of jump back to the U a bit. You know, I think some of those things were interesting, you know, because you were probably, I mean, you were coming in always being a front runner, right? You know, for the most part, excelled, you know, always doing things. And then what was it like for you to get into this next level where it's like, oh, I'm not the best one out here, you know?
Yep.
What was that like?
Yeah, it's shocking because you always hear about, like, every level of play that you go up, like how much better it is and how much more competitive and like the vast difference. And
did you believe it?
Oh, I mean, like, I did, but I was,
before you went in, did you believe it was going to be that different
on paper? It's like, yeah, everyone's bigger and faster. You look at the rosters compared to high school. It's like, wait, I was heavier than three of my offensive linemen in high school. Now these dudes are 6'7", 315. It's like, all right, well, I'm going to have to get on my tiptoes. But I think the first play that I ever saw. So we played TCU. I was a walk-on red shirt. And I had made the trip. We were at home, and this is back when TCU was sick. They had Trayvon Boykin. Like, they had, again, a great team. But the first play I saw was we kicked off, and they're returning it to our side of the sideline. And one of our linebackers, I think it was Damian Wilson, who's a Super Bowl champ, just a stud, but he came screaming and hits this dude, knocks his helmet off. The guy had dreadlocks. They're flying everywhere. And this happened 10 yards in front of me, and that's the oh crap moment that it's like, hey, this is the big boys, like you better be ready to eat. And so it was shocking, but you're exactly right. Like, I always kind of had the joke of you go from being the man to a nobody once you go from being high school, again, successful in high school and at the junior college level, like had a lot of success and accolades, and then you go to the U of M, and I'd be lying if I said I knew I was going to play right away, because I go into a running back room that had David Cobb, who was in the NFL, Rodney Smith, who was in the NFL, Shannon Brooks, who had NFL caliber, and now he's playing in Canada, and Berkeley Edwards, the son of, or the brother of Braylon Edwards. Like, I was with some dudes.
Yeah.
And you're in a room like that, and you're like, well, first off, like, you get humbled really quick, and you're like, what am I doing here?
Right.
And you just have imposter syndrome, but yeah, it was the most humbling experience, because for me as a younger kid, I actually spoke about this at the ETS summit that we have every year as an uncommon story. We talk about maybe an athlete who's had a big impact or big growth area. And I actually talked about myself, not in a sense of like anything good, because it was about my growth as a person going from someone who was very ego driven. Like I'm an Enneagram 3, like, you know all about that. And So with that, like, I was always so conscious of accomplishment.
Right.
And then you go to playing zero plays throughout your college career at the U of M, and you realize that being humble is huge, but you learn how to be a team player.
Yeah.
You learn how you have so much more gratitude for those dudes in high school that were on the scout team, and maybe you knew they were never going to play, and like, you'd get pissed at them because they weren't giving you a very good look on defense when you're trying to practice your plays and all that stuff. But you realize, like, when you're a scout team player at the U of M, like, they need you to be prepared for Michigan in the Big House next week. And I had to really change my perspective from being the dude who was going to score all the touchdowns and, you know, stack up the stats and all that stuff, to go to be someone who, I mean, people probably never even knew was on the team. And so it was, as I kind of reflected on it, it's like, during that time, it was super depressing. Like, as a person who's never dealt with, again, like, depression, anxiety, that sort of thing, like, looking back on it, it's like, I was. It's like, I was a nobody out there. No one knew who I was. I go to practice. I mean, I was always recognized by the coaches, and the coolest thing Coach Kill ever did for me after our spring game, when I scored a touchdown and then I scored another one, but they called me down when I wasn't. We circled up the practice after, and he goes, "Where's that running back at?" And I'm sitting there front and center, and I go, he goes, "You're a tough son of a bitch." And so that was probably my biggest accolade. But yeah, you learn a ton going from being the star to a nobody.
Oh. Yeah. And what were you going to school for at the time, degree-wise?
Yeah, so that was always interesting, too, because when I went into college, like, I wanted to be around sports. Like, it was just always something I was super, I loved.
Yep.
And I wanted to work with athletes in some sense, and so you'd think of being an athletic trainer.
Yep.
But then I realized I didn't necessarily want to tape ankles and deal with that sort of stuff, and then I was thinking, well, I want to be a physical therapist because people get hurt all the time. I want to be someone who can help. And then you realize, well, now you have to go get a doctorate rather than just your bachelor's degree. And it just didn't appeal to me as much. And so fortunately, going into college, I was a kinesiology major. And that's basically exercise science, but to my understanding, more holistic. There's a psychological approach. There's some societal stuff you'll do. It's in depth. And then I was a nutrition minor. So I'm like, well, I'm going to have the credentials of, human performance and physiology and nutrition, and it's going to provide a lot of value for me and wherever I go. And fortunately, I got linked up with Ryan, and that's when I started my internship towards the end of my college career.
How'd you guys get connected?
So one of my coaches in junior college actually trained with ETS.
Okay.
And he would always wear this sweatshirt around, and it was a sweet logo. And I'm getting sweatshirt guy. I'm like, that's a sweet sweatshirt. I want one of those. And then he'd be like, oh, this is ETS. And I would see these videos on YouTube that were posted, just super grainy. And I'd see pictures on Google of this sports performance facility. And it's like, well, for me, being a meathead, someone who's always in the weight room, just loved that sort of stuff. I'm like, well, what's this about? And when I was in college, I had had more conversations with our strength and conditioning staff at the U of M, and I was blessed because, like, I had a guy, Dustin Perry, who's been the director of performance for the 49ers for the last 6 years, and now the new head strength coach for the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Hill. He was one of the interns that was there, and Eric Klein, Kane Thompson, these dudes that were some of the smartest people and, like, very, very, like, they got so many accolades to their strength conditioning portfolio. I was learning from them, and they were telling me, like, Chad Pearson actually gave me one of my first books, Starting Strength by Mark Ripito, and he's like, read this for me. And we would talk about strength and conditioning and what careers look like. And when I got linked up with Ryan in something that was very, very niche, like it wasn't around for anybody. I never had access to it. And once we had, again, had some conversations and I asked him, like, do you guys do like internships? Like, how can I work here?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, we do internships. Am I getting paid? No. I was like, all right, well, let's go.
Is this in or outside of college?
This is in my last semester of college. I was finishing up my nutrition minor.
Yeah.
So I couldn't do anything when I was playing football. We weren't getting paid like the dudes are now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I was in that panic mode of like, what am I going to do for my life?
Mm-hmm.
And got linked up with Ryan and haven't looked back since.
Wow.
Yeah.
When did you meet your wife?
High school. High school. So we've been together since 2010.
Dang.
Yep. So we were both in high school together. I was 2 years older. And it was funny because I met her through one of my classmates.
Yeah.
We have this running joke in the family where I'm like, I never knew you had a hot sister. And he goes, well, at the time I didn't. so anyways, we started dating in 2010. It worked out perfect because she finished up her last year of high school. That's when I was at RCTC. And then she went to the U of M, and it was probably me just being a sucker and chasing the girl. And like, no, I can play for the Gophers. And so we ended up going to school together, and obviously we got married in 2020. We're super fortunate with the timing through everything that was going on. We had a beautiful wedding, and we'll have our fourth anniversary here in August.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what does she do?
So she works at C.H. Robinson. So she's a lead operations coordinator out there. She got linked up with the company through their manager, Kelly, who I had known from my time at the rack. And he had asked me, he's like, well, is your wife looking for a job? She went to school for business marketing, entrepreneurship. And I was like, I'm sure she'd take an interview.
Yeah.
She interviewed, and none of this is because of me, but she interviewed Friday and Saturday morning, woke up to a job offer.
Dang.
And so she's been there ever since, and it's a great company. She loves what she does, and she's able to be remote, so she can be with her daughter most of the time, and she's able to, again, have flexibility of schedule while I just grind my face off. Mm-hmm. So,
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to kind of, you know, hear about this ETS progression now, and you know, it's clear obviously that you've had a career in sports. You have a passion for it. I mean, you love that kind of stuff, and that's like exciting. And it's cool that you were able to find like something where you could keep running with that, you know, because a lot of people they have to stop it and go do something else, and all right, real life now I gotta stop. And but I love that you could like integrate it in, and that's sick, because you can obviously see the passion that you got for it. So you get linked up with Ryan. This was just location one, right?
So they were opening location two.
Okay.
Yep. And so it was Lakeville, Minnesota.
Okay. Yep. And how long had it been around, like at that point, ETS in general?
6 years. So from 2010 to 2016, we had one location.
Okay.
And then August of 2016, we opened up our Lakeville location. The director, Trevor Morning, who's one of my closest friends and a mentor to me and all that stuff, he was the one I was working under when I went there. Mm-hmm. And so 2016, we had two locations. During that time, I was an unpaid intern for 8 months. I was personal training at the rack. I'd basically work 6 a.m., have a client, and then until noon, I'd sprinkle clients in. And basically from there, 6 to noon, I'd work. I'd get a lift in, I'd get a meal, I'd get in the car at 2, get to Lakeville by 3, be done working by 8, home at 9. And it was like, that was real life. It's like,
dang.
Hey, if you want this, you're going to go earn it.
Mm-hmm.
And so throughout that time between me working in Lakeville and us opening in Rochester, we had 6 other locations open. And so Rochester. And
was that just real quick? Was that Ryan's plan from the beginning, was to have multiple locations?
Nope.
I didn't think so.
Nope.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'd asked him this, I think it was last year, we were having lunch. And I was like, did you ever think this was going to happen?
Yeah,
he goes,
yeah.
Not a chance. And so we were fortunate throughout our progression as a company to link up with some amazing people that are now in our HQ ownership team. And when I came aboard, like, we were figuring it out.
Like, yeah,
Yeah. We would communicate via Facebook Messenger. And so we would have our central communication there. And as we started to put our business processes together and figure out our business model and how we can get this to as many markets as possible, again, we learned as we went with a lot of it and took a lot of risk. And ultimately, now, I mean, we opened up 2019. That was our ninth location for Rochester. And since then, we'll be opening up number 40 here by the end of the year.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Where are these all like located? Yeah. Is it all over the place or is it Midwest or what's that look like geographically?
Yeah. No, mainly Midwest. So we have a ton in the metro area, north, south, east, west, southeast, northwest.
There's just so many. Yeah.
So many. But we have basically almost an equal amount in Wisconsin now.
Interesting.
Yep. Last year opened up two in the Des Moines area, Ankeny and Grimes. And we are going into Illinois here this year as well. So got one in Omaha, Nebraska, and we'll be opening one up in New York. So it's, I mean, it's been wild. We are Midwest dominant, but we've had a goal as a company like to be in every NFL city if we could.
Right.
So we definitely aren't going to stop in the Midwest, that's for sure.
But, yeah. Well, it's cool that you can be strategic like that. You know, it's like, hey, we know where these are at. If we can be in the same locations, it's obviously heavy for those kinds of things. I was just talking to a company in Mankato, Tailwind, and they do these developments, these student like housing, and that was like their plan. Let's just open it in all these, not NFL, you know, but college towns, you know, all across the area because like, why? Like, well, that's where everyone needs student housing. And I'm like, why wouldn't I think of that? That's genius.
Exactly.
You know, it's for you guys, like, why wouldn't we open these in all these strategic, great spots where, like, everyone's all in for sports and, you know. So I love that.
Yeah.
I want to kind of talk about your growth inside of the organization. You know, obviously the company has grown, it's scaling. But how did you kind of progress through, you know, growing internally?
Yeah.
What'd that look like?
Yeah, so in 2016 when I started, like I said, I was an unpaid intern for 8 months, and then I was working part-time as I was, again, balancing another job and just trying to, again, do my part and earn my way up, and ultimately got my directorship in 2019, and since then, we basically opened up 2019 right before the pandemic hit, and as we were building our business, like, we had set a record in the amount of athletes we signed up in month one. As we approached March of 2020, we had about 90 athletes on membership. Then we had to shut down, and that's a whole other story where we were able to, again, see what we're made of and see how long we can hold our breath. But through there, we opened back up in June with the intention of never shutting our doors again, doubled our members. And then since then, we've been in Rochester, the highest revenue-producing facility we've had for the last 3 years. But with that, like...
Rochester is?
Rochester is.
From all of them?
For all of them.
There we go.
So I learned from the best, South Metro. That was my guy. He set the standard high, and that was my goal. I was like, hey, this is what best friends do. We're going to beat each other, and we're going to compete. And so anyways, throughout my time, like being a director, I was always just eager to do more. I'm a busybody. Like, I want to help. I want to, again, contribute. I want to be someone that's of value. Mm-hmm. And just over time, like, I proved that to Ryan with things like just programming, like, what can I do to contribute to, like, evolve our programs as a company? And I was always chiming in with continuing education stuff that I was picking up from guys like Brian, who's my business mentor and close friend as well. But throughout that time, we had basically gotten to a point in our growth where it's like, there's only so much HQ can do for everybody, meaning, like, when we've got 35 directors, it's like, we want to be able to have everyone have access to Ryan and Jed and Chad. But ultimately, like, if we're going to grow and we're going to optimize, we need people to step up. And so I was selected as one of the five senior directors at the start of this year. And throughout that time, basically now I'm responsible for, again, my team, which is four other locations along with my own. And what I do is, again, we're meeting on a weekly cadence, team calls every month. And it's also just high level, like, how can I help you? What do you need? Like, where are your pain points? How do we solve these issues? And so, yeah, I'm, again, kind of backtracking a little bit, but within our company, if we help develop a director. So mm-hmm. new talent to help our business grow. We're able to invest in those locations. And so I'm not only just a senior director now, but I'm a part owner in the business. And I've got my hand in a handful of our locations where I'm able to, again, provide oversight. Certainly never step on anyone's toes because it's their business and they're going to run it effectively and take charge. I'm just there as like, hey, whatever you need, like, don't hesitate to call. Mm-hmm. And so, yep, being a senior director and a partner, like, it's forced me to lean into the leadership side of things and understand business at a higher level and still be able to, again, operate our own location. And I think this year I might have figured out delegation. I was not great at that for basically my entire career. And I got where I am now, not due to just myself, but I had a heck of a lot of good people that helped me along the way.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
So like, how do you personally like continue to develop yourself? I mean, as you're growing, as the company's growing, it's all new.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're going to face things that you've never faced before. You've learned things that you never knew before mm-hmm. that point. How do you continue to like personally develop like yourself?
So I'm a bookworm. Yeah. Growing up, I never was. It was more like, hey,
it doesn't sound like you would be.
It was more like, hey, how many games of Madden and NCAA can I play, and how many games can I win, and be just tick the rest of the day if I lost one. Like, but now, like me being an Enneagram 3, like I mentioned, I still am competitive, but I was so overly competitive in the most petty things. Uh-huh. Now it's like I'm competitive with myself and in business, where I'm like, I need to be better. And so, fortunately, when I was working at the Rack, the whole reason I ever met Brian McQuilkin, like, again, we have a mutual connection with him, yeah. was in between clients, I would basically go walk on the treadmill and read a book. Mm-hmm. And it'd be business books, whether it was Jocko Willink, whether it was Seth Godin, mm-hmm. whatever it was. I was reading these books on leadership and business to try and just understand
yeah.
and learn more, because this is what I'm seeing these successful entrepreneurs
have
do.
To. Yeah.
And one day I was just walking, and I'd never met Brian before, but he walks up to me and goes, hey, trainer, why are you reading a business book? And I go, because I'm trying to learn. And I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. Like, I'm just getting attacked. And turns out he's the owner of Active PT. And throughout that time, I had basically just pestered him. We would do book club together, like swap books, talk about them, share mm-hmm. podcasts. To this day, I send him a quote off the Heroic app every morning. And mm-hmm. Just take him out to coffee and beg for his attention. But yeah. during that time, like he really helped me understand business too, where it's like, understanding how to develop people, how to understand people. And again, you learn too that I might be in the training business, but training is just such a small piece of it, because mm-hmm. ultimately you can put together a perfect program and hand it to somebody. But if you aren't able to communicate it effectively, if you can't take something as complex as training and simplify it so that a 12-year-old can understand it, you're not going to get the perceived benefit out of it. You're not going to motivate them to want to do it. And so learning how to communicate, learning how to, again, lead a team, learning how to delegate, all of those things come from books, come from podcasts, come from, again, lots of time out, taking Brian out for coffee and going up to HQ to pick the CEO's brain. And it's just asking a lot more higher level questions and realizing that the more you begin to know and learn, the less you know. and it's just a constant quest of like, okay, this looks interesting to me. I need to read about this. And I just consume content all the time.
So what's like the best part of like your job? Like, what do you love doing?
The people, hands down. I mean, not only from the top down perspective of ETS, like we call ourselves ETS fam, like I had said, and it's not just lip service. It's like, I could call Ryan right now, he'd answer the phone. Mm-hmm. I could text Jed, he would respond right away. And so knowing that I've got people in my corner that, again, are always there for me is huge. Uh-huh. And so with that, it's the people not only within the organization, but the athletes we serve and the families we serve. Like, you never really realize it when you get into this business, the role that you play in somebody's life and what the value of a coach or a mentor is. And the more I'm around my kids and my athletes and my coaches that, again, work alongside me, again, the more you really appreciate and the more gratitude you start to get or to have towards those people, because not only am I trying to serve them, they're serving me. Mm-hmm. They're filling my cup so I can go fill others. And again, to kind of tie a knot on it, it's just like, every day I get to go interact with people, get to be around people that want to be around me, whereas I could go sit at a desk 9 to 5, hate my life, go cold call somebody who's just going to hang up the phone. Like, I get to be around people that I'm not an inconvenience to them during that day. And so being able to be around the kids is there's nothing better. Seeing them progress, it's like, it's my badge of honor to be like, hey, they've dominated this and I might have played a small part, but I might have brought out that inner dog within them, right?
Oh, yeah.
To go earn that.
100%.
And then also with the people bit, I say the worst part about the job is also the best part, and that's when the people leave. And fortunately for our company, we don't have turnover in a sense of people come aboard and coach and then they quit because they found something shiny and new and they want to go do that. It's like, when I have people hired on, I'm pouring into them so that they can go be a future leader and a future director of a location. And when I had 4 of my guys leave last year, that was the hardest time ever. Because those are my dudes. Those are my people.
Yeah.
Exactly. And now understanding like they've just opened up an opportunity to turn their passion into a profession is super fulfilling. And now the new coaches that come aboard, it's like, now it's your turn. Mm-hmm. Come earn it and let's do this together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sick.
Yeah, nothing better.
I like that. Yeah. I think for me, you know, I like to ask, motivation, mm-hmm. I think is something cool. Because everyone's got, you know, their kind of their internal fire and it's different for everybody. But I'd say like personally, even mine has like changed over the years. So like for you and like your journey through this, you know, what was like initial motivation and kind of how has that changed, you know, to where you're at now?
In regards to just like to business, like when we opened up?
Yeah, just for like what keeps you like fired up and going and kicking butt every single day?
I think it's like the unrealistic desire to be perfect and you know you're never going to attain it, but it's the chase and the process that you fall in love with where I just like new challenges. And so when we're seeing success as a business, it's like, that's all great, but what can we do better? What can we do more of? How can we serve more people? How can we make a bigger impact? And the challenges and the adversity that come along with that, that's my motivation. And obviously there are days where it's like things get menial and very monotonous. And Andy Frisella has a great quote on...
I love that, dude.
Oh, my God. I mean,
He's great.
If we get anything out of this podcast, people need to listen to Andy
Frisella. Go listen to Andy Frisella.
Shout out Andy Frisella. But with that... He talks about mastering the monotony, and like as an entrepreneur, as a person in business, as anybody, like if you can come in and day out and do the simple tasks better than you did the day before and do them to the best of your ability, like that's something that again builds discipline. And so discipline will always outlast motivation. And there was a quote in that Heroic app, I think I sent it to Brian, shout out Brian, that said motivation is like showering doesn't last forever. You have to practice it daily. And so doing things that maybe you don't want to do, you got to go do it. And for me, I'm going to do it well.
Yep.
And ultimately now it's just like how much growth that we have yet to come as a company. That's my motivation right there. It's like, how can I get my guys that are with me right now to go have their own location? What do we need to do to make sure that can happen while also continuing to dominate in Rochester?
It was funny when I worked at my job before I started Media Core.
What was that?
So it's KFI Products in Spring Valley, steel manufacturer, and then we built plows and winches and stuff for like ATVs. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty fun. Mm-hmm. It was a great crew of people, you know, and I enjoyed it. I was there for like 4 years. The reason I left was because I hit a ceiling and they couldn't give me the next step because there's nobody, there's no position there. It was just like, no, that's it. Mm-hmm. But toward the end there, I got just huge into listening to Andy Frisella.
Yes.
I mean, and this is back 2016, 2017.
MFCEO?
Yeah. MFCEO podcast all the time. And I'm just getting fired up, you know, and stuff like that. And I'd be on the calls with like warranty people that are like pissed off. And, you know, it's kind of fun because we weren't like corporate-y. So like you could kind of throw it back a little bit.
For sure.
And these are all like outdoor guys that are like aggressive. And, you know, I'd be giving it back and, you know, they'd politely still, professionally. But, you know, they're getting all pissed, and then, you know, but my boss, the manager over there was He'd listen in if I was getting heated. Mm-hmm. He'd jump on, and then he'd get pissed off. He'd, Josh, put this guy on hold. Let me talk to him. I'm like, hey, my manager wants to talk to you. Like, shh. He'd rip their head off. And I'm like, well, I like this place.
Let's
like,
go.
This is good. This is good. But Andy Fazella has been he was a huge motivator for, like, making it happen, going and doing it. No excuses, no BS. Mm-hmm. If you want to do it, it's like it's yours, you know. Yep. But you got to do the work.
Yep.
And I liked his MFCEO podcast probably even better than the one he has now.
It's coming back.
But is it?
Yep. That's on its own platform too, because you know he's not big on getting censored. So, but yeah. It's coming back.
So that'll be sick. But then I he's also my excuse for my fitness journey.
Hey.
Because you know. He got successful and he grinded and he let his fitness go. And then he dialed it in when he was a little bit more successful. So that's my excuse now.
Let's go.
I'm letting it go a little bit, but then I'm going to dial it in.
Hey.
And even though I need to probably do that sooner. But
journey's not done, baby.
Yep, yep.
Journey's not done.
Solid dude. I wanted to kind of ask you how, like, you know, I feel like this industry gets more and more competitive. Technology is coming into play a lot more. You know, it's just, I feel like it's so much more advanced than like it used to be. It was like, hey, you're a big, strong farm kid, you know, and you can do things faster and harder than people can. And, you know, it's just like strong survive kind of thing. But now it's like, I feel like it gets so advanced now and like technical and the training has just gone through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
How is this industry changing with like tech and everything?
Well, there's more and more and more of it coming out. People have never been more into metrics and data. Like you look at baseball and they're talking about exit velocity and spin rate. You look at a $25,000 golf simulator that's going to tell you your launch angle. Like there's all that type of stuff, but what it all comes down to in a training sense, like life is very cyclical. It always comes back to the basics. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing that we're always going to stick to is like, we're going to make sure we're doing things the right way. We're doing it correctly. We're not trying to be the next Instagram viral video of doing something super flashy that has no benefit. And so
how do you compete with that too? There's got to be a ton of that. Because every TikTok, it's ridiculous, you know, it's like, and they'll train you on everything you want to talk about, you know.
And it's just, with training, it's interesting because the barrier for entry has never been lower because all you need to do on Instagram is put coach in front of your name and all of a sudden you've got credibility. And people are going to buy your product that you probably stole from somebody else. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have any interaction with them. You're just trying to collect sales.
Yeah, they look decent. They're a coach.
100%.
You know,
and you didn't know that.
Must know what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. This dude, he looks good. And it's just like when parents say, well, my kid's actually working with this person. He played professional here. It's like, that doesn't mean anything in the training space. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he might have played really, really well at that level. But is he going to be able to serve your 12-year-old and be able to communicate on the things that he might have learned at the professional ranks to a kid who's 12?
How does that correlate? Yeah.
And so it muddies the water quite a bit because you see all these videos, and I get sent these things from my kids all the time, mainly like just trolling, like, hey, are we going to do this at our next session? And it's some dude jumping on a trampoline, doing a backflip with dumbbells in his hands. Yeah. Like, and you see a lot of that stuff that's flash and flare, and people are just trying to go viral and sell you something. And the one thing that we do is we keep that human element in there where it's like you're going to be working with someone. There's going to be someone who's going to be giving you coaching every single day where they're going to tell you the truth. They're going to hold you accountable. If you're late, there's probably going to be a consequence. Mm-hmm. Like it's the training bit like I talk about. It's very simple.
All right.
Move well. Can you push? Can you pull? Can you sprint? Can you hinge? Can you carry? Like can you do all these things that are going to help you become more physically prepared? But also, when people, like I said, if they buy an online program, it might be from a reputable source, but they don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. They don't have anyone telling them like, hey, your depth sucks. They don't have anyone saying, hey, you know what that tempo means? It's pretty important. You shouldn't overlook it. And so it's the character bit that comes alongside of working with us where, again, people are learning discipline. Mm-hmm. They're holding themselves accountable.
Well, how much does accountability play into it,
you know,
for like what you guys are doing? I feel like that's got to be a big thing too.
It's huge because there's sometimes you just have to sit there and not open your mouth. There's a lot of things that you want to say in some conversations when it comes down to why isn't my bench press up 50 pounds? And it's like, well, first off, if you added 5 pounds every single week all year long, you'd increase an insurmountable amount that's not ever going to happen. It's like progress takes many forms. And so with accountability, it's like you're only going to get out what you put in. And so if someone comes in, they do their program, they're consistent with it, they're progressing their weights accordingly, they're listening to the coaches, odds are high they're getting better when testing week comes around. Whereas there might be people that have been showing up, but showing up might be half the battle. But if you just show up and you don't do anything when you're there, who's to blame? The coaches? No. It's the person who's not putting the work in. And so it's a real life smack in the face and you realize like, hey, I have nobody to blame but myself. And so accountability is everything.
And that can be humbling too.
100%. Yeah. Where it's like, I mean, the cool part is us as coaches and as mentors and whatever you want to consider us, like the trust that we build with our athletes, if I have to tell someone the open and honest truth and be like, hey, you're kind of sucking right now. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, you're getting in your own way because of X, Y, and Z. They're going to listen to that and they're not, I'm never going to be demeaning. I'm always going to be demanding, but never demeaning. But I'm going to tell you the truth because I'm not doing you a favor if I don't. And so if you come in and you're, again, having social hour and your expectations are to go play at this level, but again, you're showing up and you're not doing anything when you're here, who's going to be the first person to talk to you? Probably me. And who's going to be the first person to tell you I love you and that conversation's done? Definitely me. Because ultimately that's what caring is. And that's something that we're always going to do.
So what's like the future for you, for ETS? What do you see that kind of like becoming? What's your goals?
Yeah, I mean, the future's scary, but it's just because it's so dang exciting. You know, it's just like my dad once told me, I was probably complaining about something and I was probably nervous to go to college or whatever it was. And he's like, don't ever be afraid of the future. I'm like, shut up, Dad. Let me just be in my feels for a second. But I remember him telling me that. And with business, it's like there's so much opportunity out there that you want to grab it all at once and just go for it. But obviously being strategic, being smart, doing it the right way is something that causes you to be patient. And so for me, like it's actually interesting because we did an exercise with my staff the last couple of years and we do a word of the year, like pick a word. This is going to be something that you're setting your intentions towards. And then we do a round table, we discuss it. And in 2023, my word of the year was sacrifice, where it was, I knew I was going to have my daughter born in 2023 and there was gonna be a lot of things that I'm going to have to sacrifice. Like my wants and needs, like they come second now. And in 2024, I chose presence because I'm so paranoid and anxious about the future all the time. And just always thinking about what's next, what am I supposed to be doing? What can I be doing better? Or I suck at being present. So that's why when we're doing a podcast, like my intention is like, hey, I need to shut up. I need to stop talking. I need to listen. I need to breathe. Like I want to be here right now talking with you because I'm having a hell of a time. Right. Yeah. But just in my day to day, I try and be more present because I know that whatever I'm doing in the day to day is going to lead me to where I need to go. Obviously as opportunities approach and the future again shows up eventually, like I'll be ready for whatever it is. And obviously we're set for a ton of growth as a company and we're going to make sure that we do that because the only people that are hurt if we don't is the athletes of that area that we don't go to. So yeah,
that's sick. Yeah, I feel like you guys have a lot of like these business systems figured out over the years. Like do you run an operating system or did you create your own or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of systems in place and they're always evolving and they're definitely getting better. Like we have our pre-sale process that we're trying to clean up where when we go to a market, what's that look like? How are we getting evaluations on the books? Are we utilizing marketing? Things like that. And so that's, again, come a long way. We don't use like EOS or anything, even though, I mean, again, our guys told me all about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And yeah. I try and implement it as clunky as I can because I know how beneficial it is. But like we have our weekly cadences of our senior directors where, again, that our process of meeting with our teams to, again, track our KPIs and identify areas of weakness that we need to attack. Like there's so much that we've just gotten better at as a company, but we certainly don't have it all figured out yet because no one does. but our programming is always continuing to evolve. Ryan's brother, Corey, came aboard, revamped all of our systems, our certification process for all of our coaches so that there's no stone left unturned as to like how qualified our people are. It's an ever-evolving process, but there's always wheels in motion, and we're always trying to be better.
That's what I love about, like, you know, you guys aren't like, you know, startup at this point, but, you know, you were in that phase at one point, and like, you know, there's an excitement around, like, I always get excited because, like, one, there's like no rules that put us in a box of like, you have to do it this way. You know, there's better practices and there's things that you can learn, but there's not like a, you have to do it this way and this is the only way you're allowed to like do it. Mm-hmm. I get excited about like that when I'm thinking about growth and what we need to do and what we should do. And it's like, well, what if, you know, I think we should be doing this. Like, it's not this big, long process of us switching. It's like, all right, well, that's what we're going to do now.
Yep.
This is the way we do this. And then if we find a better way, now we're doing it this way. And it's just like, I feel like it's that constant like progression.
For sure.
But I just love like the freedom of like, we can take this anywhere we want to go, you know?
What do you think for MediaCorp has been like an example of that for progressing your systems and like where you've seen maybe the most growth due to implementing this?
I think the some of the biggest challenges that we've faced is, one, there's no roadmap for like this industry, mm-hmm. And there's not for a lot of industries, but like there was never even like somebody that we could like look to and go like, we want to implement similar things like them. Because like I, you know, it's just me and like I'm doing freelance videography for realtors and some athletes and some businesses here and there. And it was like, you know, you don't know anybody, but you start growing and you start progressing, you know, and at those stages, it's like, okay, like this is a company of two or three, like they're doing a pretty good job. Like, what are they doing? Mm-hmm. But you get to a point where we're like, you know, we're 8-9 people in and we're trying to scale and we have like all this energy to do so. There's no like business model. There's no one that we can like look to and go like, well, how'd they do that? So I feel like every like level up, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like, you know, D1, D2, like everything that's kind of just progressing is, well, we got to restart and we got to figure out this, you know, how do we do this? You know, when we brought Joe on with marketing, it was, I don't know, what do we have, 3-4 months now, Joe? 3-4 months. Something like that. I don't know.
Shout out Joe.
Yeah, shout out Joe. 6 months in. But it's like literally we've been, there was no, hey, Joe, like follow this path and just go do it.
Yep.
It was like, well, we had to create the path as we go. And every step we're just learning, okay, this worked, this didn't work, shift it, do this. So that's like our sales, our marketing processes, our video processes have been built just by like constantly basically failing, mm-hmm. you know, failed here, do this now. Oh, fail there, tweak it this way.
Fail forward. Fail,
you know, and like that's why I love, like we just flip it on a dime.
Yeah.
Dude, this sucks, we can't do it. Right. You know, we gotta swap that.
That reminds me just something I try and tell my coaches, like in their development, like we have the non-negotiables that we need to learn. Like you need to be ETS certified, and you need to be a master of our craft when it comes to training. But ultimately, like I'm gonna tell you what you need to know based on what I've gathered in my experience. But I want to know what you want to know. Mm-hmm. So like I judge a person by the questions that they ask, because like that's going to show me like how driven are they? Like mm-hmm. how deep are they going to understand like what they could be better at? And so, and then ultimately too, something pops up where it's like, that was like, how have I never thought of that? Mm-hmm. Now that gets added to the process, gets added to everything. And again, we all grow together. And so that's huge.
Mm-hmm. That's our like tagline. Let's grow together.
Yeah.
Love that.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Dang right.
No, that's like that's the fun thing. And that's probably, you know, part of why we do this podcast is just like the learning aspects of it. You know, people always ask like, you know, why do we do the pod? And like, well, one, you know, it's just, it's fun. It's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, we're in the room with all these awesome people, you know, yourself being one of them. It's like, you get to soak up, you know, information like the whole time. It's like, well, what are people's like learning experiences? What have they faced? How'd they get better? How'd they progress? what makes these things successful and these things not, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like everyone's got a different story and a different journey, but there's a lot of different, like, similar elements, you know? And you start to piece that stuff together, and it's like, hey, like, this is exciting because, you know, and you just randomly think of it. Yeah. You know, I was talking to a guy recently. Some topic came up, and I'm like, oh, I actually had, like, so-and-so on the podcast. And we dove into that problem. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what they did.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, I would have never known that unless I talked to that person and,
for sure,
you know, heard that story or something like that.
Well, that's the coolest part about a podcast. Like, you could have a million viewers like we have, mm-hmm. or you could have one. But the whole point is, like, you just got in the room with someone who you got to have a discussion for a couple hours, mm-hmm. and, like, that's an opportunity to learn. And
absolutely.
Like, I feel like being a bookworm, like, and just growing up, I think it's like every interaction I have, like, I'm trying to learn something from it, right?
Oh yeah.
Like, I know I'm trying to learn everything and be a master of everything, even though I know that's never going to happen, but I'm trying to maximize my time on this earth and know as much as I can, right? Yeah. And so I think that's huge. And, like, we spoke about mentorship with people you've probably come across and myself, and it's like, that's the best learning you can get. Like, mm-hmm. you can read everything in books. You can, again, listen to all the podcasts, watch the motivational YouTube videos. But until you have someone who's lived it, told you their experience, and, like, prepared you for when you do inevitably face it, mm-hmm. I think that just connects so much more because it's real. So,
how do you think, like, fitness and business go hand in hand?
I would say more than people would realize, because when you think of fitness, it's like, people would tell me all the time, and they'll joke, like, I'm in decent shape. Okay, I'm just gonna put that. So I'm in decent shape. But people I've known from my past, like, they've made the remarks, like, I can't wait till you fall off or you stop lifting. And then I'm just like, it's never going to happen. I'm not going to let it happen. And so with that, like, the amount of discipline it takes to be consistent, to make sure that you prioritize, again, your health and your wellness and going to get your workouts in or whatever you prefer to do. If you play pickleball, if you go on a walk, whatever. Mm-hmm. The discipline of doing that every single day, it's like, if you don't have discipline in business, you're not going to last very long. Mm-hmm. And so you need to be able to embrace the suck. You need to be able to do the things that you don't want to do every single day, because at the end of it, you always feel better. Mm-hmm. People talk about like cold plunges. Mm-hmm. It's like, I never want to do it, but at the end of it, I feel so much better.
Yep.
Is that the reason for their success? No, but it's just Naval Ravikant. He talks about taking a cold shower every morning. He goes, I know that if I start my day with a cold shower, it's something that I know I've just overcome. I did something that I faced adversity. I didn't want to do it, but I did it and I'm better because of it. Mm-hmm. And so fitness and business, like, I think there are so many just correlations you can make between the two.
Yeah, I've always been, like, driven in certain areas, like really heavily. Mm-hmm. And with the company now, and even over, like, the years, I equate a lot of, like, the success to this grind factor, mm-hmm. of, like, other people don't like to work hard. I'm going to outwork them all, yep. you know. Other people think it's uncomfortable to go reach out to these people. Sure, it's uncomfortable to me, too. I'm going to do it anyways, though, yep. because that's what I know I need to do. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, and I talk to a lot of guys about, you know, systems and processes and operations, and I'm learning more and more about it, which has been great. But before that point, you know, and it's still, even today, it's like there's a brute force that just, like, we won't fail because we won't let it fail.
Yep.
And, like, we'll get the next job because we'll fight tooth and nail to get it. Mm-hmm. And outwork anybody else, you know.
Do you have TikTok? Mm. I'm assuming. Like, do you scroll through everyone's?
I do, like, reels more than TikTok.
For sure. And so have you ever come across the School of Hard Knocks? The guy who interviewed.
I have.
And so he's, like, interviewed Mark Cuban. He's got a very successful channel, but a great example is that he'll walk up to people and he'll ask, have you ever been broke before?
Yeah.
And they'll be like, of course. And they'll talk about their experience in business and how much money they make and whatever. But I remember one video he asked somebody, he goes, if you lost everything right now, do you think you could get it back? He goes, oh yeah, you could strip me naked in the street and I'll be hanging still in 6 months. Mm-hmm. And it's like, because you've acquired those skills.
Oh, that was,
it was the real estate dude, Jack dude. I don't know what his name is, but.
Come on, I know this guy.
It's just like a Joe Rogan moment, like, Jamie, look it up. Joe, we need you.
I know, Joe. Well, it's the guy that runs with, I can't think of his name. So dumb. I've watched him. Waller. No, Justin Waller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like something like that where, I mean, you talk about not letting something fail. It's like, I have the same viewpoint where it's like, I've acquired the skills to, again, go through stuff. When the pandemic hit, obviously, like, it sucked for everybody in it. Won't get into that. But knowing that, hey, we just started a business. It's flourishing. Now, all of a sudden, it could be taken away from you in a second. Mm-hmm. And so now, when we had to realize that it's like, we got 90 families that don't have training right now, and we need to find a way to provide value to them. We completely flipped the script. We're adaptable in the situation, made it through, and now we're better because of it. But like, if something like that ever happens again, it's just like, God willing, it doesn't. But you got to think that you've acquired the skills to be able to grit through it, be able to, again, get yourself back on your feet. And again, you're in control. So
I feel like it comes, you know, when I take like everybody here, like I'm personally responsible for like, for them, you know, at least financially even, to go like, I'm the last line of defense to like, if crap hits the fan, you know, and that gives me peace, you know, like, even like Jake, my brother, when we were getting into this and like, everyone's like, don't do it, you know, go to school, go corporate stuff, just go work and work your way up. There was that, there's that dog of like, do you ever think it's gonna fail? Like, one, I know I could work literally anywhere at this point because it's like, it's too sexy. Like, I can, you know, too many people, and it's just like, they know you're going to just outwork everyone there. And like, I love that. But at the same time, I was like, I don't think I'll get to a spot where it would fail. Like, I work 24/7, like, if I need to, and I'd do whatever it would take to like keep it going. So it wasn't even like a thing that like came into my mind, but what I was getting to even before that was like, I've had the hardest time bringing that hardcore of like motivation and discipline into fitness. You know, I've always been like a big dude and like, I've always been a lifter and I love it to death. And I haven't done it for a long time recently, but I just don't get it. I'm like, how does my life lean so hardcore into like just dialed in business? Can go day and night, never lose energy. You know, it'd be 11 o'clock and I'm wired. I'm like, let's keep going. Why? And I have to do things just because I have duties to my wife and things like that, that I just have to stop. And if I didn't have my wife, I'd work 24/7. I wouldn't care about it. But I don't get why I can't like drive that into like fitness and just like get it together consistently.
I think the dog inside of you of like wanting to push and work so hard is what gets in your way, because ultimately it's like, you know, you can work yourself to the bone, you can grind, you can go answer emails, reach out to prospects, you can do all that stuff. And I think what might be happening is like, if you take an hour out of your day to again go do something else, you're taken away from that. And as someone who just mentioned, I'm a provider for my team, like I'm financially responsible for them, these are my guys, I'm going to take care of them. I think you're afraid to be selfish. And I think what you need to do is be more selfish. Give yourself 45 minutes out of the day where it's like, phone's on do not disturb. My brother doesn't exist. He knows I'll get to him if I need it. And then all of a sudden you're going to do something. But I think it's the fact of the matter that you work so dang hard. That's the reason that, again, I feel like that's what's getting in your way.
That's interesting.
You're selfless.
I could see that. Because I try to give my wife time because, like, one, obviously I love her, but, like, two, I know I have to. Like, as a husband, as a, you know, you're a father. I'm not yet. I will be one day, hopefully, God willing. But, like, you have a, you know, this was my baby forever. And it was, like, once I got married, I knew that has to take a big priority in my life still. So I'll set intentional time for that, but I have to because she knows I could just do it all the time. Weekends, just like, let's keep going. It's always something.
And I think one thing to mention, our wives, like, obviously my wife is a saint. Like, she is the quarterback of our family. Like, she, if Kylie didn't have my wife, like, I would, I don't know what would happen. She's clearly the favorite parent, but like with my work schedule, and I have some more flexibility than I probably allow myself to take. But the reason I'm at the gym 7 days a week is because, A, I know it's the same thing. It's my baby. Like, I want to make sure that I'm bringing this thing as far as we can take it. But also, my wife, she realizes, like, that's what fills my cup. Like, right. She knows I need to lift. Otherwise, she doesn't want to deal with me if I don't get a workout in. Or if I know that I've got things that I have to take care of at work, if I don't get an hour or two to go do that, that's the only thing that's on my mind. And so it takes away from my word of the year being right. present if I'm not a little bit selfish, right. where I know I have to take care of myself. Because before I go to bed every night, I pray and I say, I'm gonna get emotional here, but I say, God, please continue to take care of me so I can take care of others. And so with that, it's like, obviously I'm nothing without her. I'm nothing without my wife. I'm nothing without my coaches, like my company. And like that stuff means the world to me. Like that's my family. But I know that like with myself, I have to take care of me, because if I don't, like those are the people that suffer. And I'm a way worse off person myself. And so, so I think that little bit of selfishness goes a long way, because if you don't again take time for yourself, if you can't master yourself, you can't be valued to anyone else. So
that's interesting. I haven't thought about it like that before. That's a cool perspective.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, you never want to, like, I know I need to be better in a number of ways in life, but it's like, I know if I don't take care of myself, like, I'm worthless. And so, so yeah, it's true come to Jesus moment, I guess. But
No, seriously, I'm like, dang, like that could be exactly what it is, you know, too. And it's, I got to be selfish now.
Better be. I'll hold you accountable.
That'll be my word of the year.
I'll text you every single day, and I'll be like, what'd you do today? Right. What was that 45 minutes?
Yep,
so if you need that, I'm not afraid to get the phone out.
No, I do. I'm a guy that needs accountability. Yep. I've kind of learned that about myself. And just like, I feel like unless it comes to this, like I need accountability. You know, especially for like, you know, things like that. It's nice though that I'm at a spot where I know I need to change and like I need to, because like if you're all about like learning and getting better personally, that's a big aspect of your life is your health and your fitness. And it's like I can be a good husband, I can try to be a great, you know, leader in my company. But that's a key like part that I gotta like dial in, and you know it's exciting. I think the other thing that that kind of like is like the Achilles heel almost is like I know it's gonna take a while.
Oh yeah,
and that's like the depressing part to me of like I'm not delusional to the fact like it's a process.
100%.
And it's gonna take a day in and day out for a long time, and it's just like. Maybe that is why, too, I'm just, like, pushing it off. Like,
it's a compound
like, I don't want to start, you know? It's like, cause I know what it's going to take.
But. Darren Hardy, it's a compound effect. We talk about that in a different sense of, like, in-season training for an athlete. When people say, well, what's 2 days a week going to do for me if I train, I mean, that infrequently? It's like, well, first off, you're practicing every day. You got sport. You got games. Like, you got life you got to take care of. You don't have time for 6 days a week. But understanding it's those two times a week done every week over a 20 or over a 12 week season, you just accumulated 24 sessions that all accumulate and compound on top of each other. So it's the more you stack together, the more wins you stack together. It's again, that process alone is going to take care of the end result.
Well, hey, I could keep rolling here. I know I could. But I do want to ask you before we kind of wrap things up, because I like to always ask everybody, what have been some of like the couple key things to you, you know, advice wise that you could pass on to somebody else, could be anywhere along their journey that has really helped you?
Yeah, man. I would say, I think one of the things that I've come across, like getting into business and basically getting ETS, like they gave me my own gym, right? Where it's like, I wanted to do everything because not only is like, if it goes well, that's going to look really good on me. Enneagram 3, hey, what's the social image? You need to have a good one. But being really, really good at turning that I into a we, because no one is successful by themselves.
Right.
There's always going to be a team of people that have pushed you along, whether directly or indirectly, people that have talked negatively about you in the past that has fueled your motivation to go do great in whatever you do. You don't do things alone. So being able to take the I out of it and always understand that we did this is something that I've gotten so much better at. I get uncomfortable taking compliments because I know that it's probably earned for someone else who helped whatever the outcome was that was so impressive, right? And so having gratitude for literally everything, like the people in your life, the meal you just ate, like the ability to be healthy and alive, like, and have opportunity in America where, again, you can make yourself whatever you want. And so having gratitude is unmatched, and understanding like you didn't do any of this alone is something that's truly humbling, but it's the reason for success. And so ultimately I know I've done pretty well so far, and like I said, it's not because of what I've done. And the only reason I'm going to do anything more in my life is because I'm going to have people pushing me along the way and holding me accountable and giving me a kick in the ass when I need it. And that's the exciting part. So
that's sick. Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for coming on, brother. This has been awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people are going to love this one. So, yeah, thank you again. And I'm excited to stay connected with you here.
I appreciate you, brother. We'll get on the boat, like you said.
That's
we'll do a part two of this if we ever need to. When we again, we're gonna get a million views.
Oh yeah, right?
MediaCorp, yep. Million views. Yep. Let's go.
That's right.
But yeah, I appreciate you.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
And as always, thank you so much for tuning in this week. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did, and got a ton of different knowledge and information from it. If you enjoyed it, remember to keep sharing it out. We're trying to keep building the community here. Yeah, and just keep on your journey. Keep progressing. Keep getting better. Keep learning. Stay hungry. We'll see you on the next one.